Welcome to Leonard Legal Buzz from the law firm of Leonard Street & Dinard. It's in the news a lot these days. Dissatisfaction with government takings of property has led to sweeping changes in eminent domain laws in Minnesota and across the country. Jim Dorsey of Leonard Street & Dinard has been practicing eminent domain and tax valuation law for over 35 years. He's a leader in Minnesota's real estate valuation bar and has helped numerous businesses and other landowners obtain recoveries from the government. Jim is here to speak with us about the changes in Minnesota's eminent domain law and the new opportunities for landowners to get a fairer shake when the government insists on taking their land. Welcome, Jim. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
To begin, what is eminent domain law?
Eminent domain law is the law that governs the right to compensation if a government takes your property for a public purpose. Eminent domain law starts with the constitutions that guarantees just compensation for taking or damaging of your property. The power of eminent domain is inherent in the federal and state government as sovereignties, and the constitutions merely protect landowners to make sure their property is only taken for a public purpose and they are paid just compensation for the taking of their property.
And specifically in relation to eminent domain law, what does your practice consist of?
Well, for over 35 years, I've represented property owners whose property has been taken and damaged for a public purpose. On occasions, I've even represented the governmental bodies in acquiring interest in private property. Basically, my representation involves representing the client from the beginning to the end of a condemnation proceeding. It usually starts with some negotiations to see if we can settle the case. If negotiations are not successful, we go on to hearings before court-appointed commissioners. And if generally the cases are settled at this level with the award of the court-appointed commissioners, either the award is accepted or is rejected and further negotiations ensue, but 95 to 98% of the cases are settled at this level. If the cases can't be settled at this level, then either party has a right to appeal to a jury trial before the court if necessary. My work involves working with appraisers who estimate market value of the property taken or damaged. We work with land planners, architects, sometimes market experts who study the market. And I also, of course, work with the property owner. Many times, the property owners have their own ideas of the value of their property, and they also have a better understanding of the impact of the taking on their property than sometimes outside experts do.
So, what's new in Minnesota eminent domain law, and what does that mean for landowners?
Well, we have substantial changes in Minnesota eminent domain law. In 2006, the legislatures made sweeping changes to the eminent domain law, mostly in reaction to the Kelo case, which was decided by the United States Supreme Court in 2005, I believe. In that case, the United States Supreme Court held that a taking for economic development was a valid public purpose if the legislature said it was. Basically, the court held it was okay to take property from a private landowner and turn it over to another private party for development. The holding caused a huge backlash all across the country. In Minnesota, the Minnesota legislature severely restricted the definition of public use for economic development and redevelopment of blighted areas. So I think the biggest change of the new statute was that it virtually eliminated the authority of the state government, the city government, the housing and redevelopment authorities, to take property from one private property owner, turn it over to another for development.
What else has changed under this new law?
Under the new law, it has made it much easier for a property owner or a tenant to recover loss of business. Essentially, the statute shifts the burden of proof to the government that its condemnation is not the cause of a business's loss. The business owner still has to show that they've terminated their business and that their business was destroyed by the taking. But once that is shown, it's up to the government to show that they were not the cause of that, that the business could not be relocated otherwise, or that the loss of business was otherwise compensated in the loss or the compensation for the land. The other second major change, which I think is significant to the property owners, is that the new statute provides for recovery of attorney's fees for the landowner if the final judgment is more than 20% or 40% than the government's last offer before filing its petition. If the final judgment is only 20% above the final offer, the court may award attorney's fees and actual out-of-pocket expenses. But if the final judgment is more than 40% of the final written offer before the filing of the petition, the award of attorney's fees and out-of-pocket expenses, including appraisal fees, other expert witness fees, which can be very significant, is mandatory for the court to make that award.
If the government comes onto a landowner's property and wants to conduct an appraisal before filing a petition, before anything, what should that landowner do?
Well, typically the government will notify the landowner that they want to come onto the property. They're just not able just to walk on the property and do an appraisal. They'll tell the landowner that the landowner has a right to be present at that meeting. I would suggest the landowner contact an attorney at that point, because sometimes the government's appraiser will ask the landowner questions that might have an impact on the opinion of the appraiser in the damages. So the landowner's got to be careful not to make admissions against his or her interest in responding to these questions. So I think the landowner should consult the attorney at that point in time. I will tell you that most landowners don't, and sometimes their statements to the appraiser will show up in their in the appraisal report and be used against them.
Does a landowner have a right to see the government appraisal before deciding to accept or reject an offer?
Yes, and this is another important feature of the new statute. The government must make a written offer before filing the petition, at least 60 days before filing the petition. And with that written offer, they are required by the statute to provide all appraisals that the government has obtained in determining the damages. It's a big advantage. Being able to see all the government's appraisals is a big advantage over the prior law, which allowed the government to pick and choose which appraisals it presented to the court-appointed commissioners, or which it showed to the landowner. It also gives the landowner a chance to take the government's appraisal that they're relying upon and say, well, you know, this assumption or this analysis or this rationale in the appraisal is not valid. It doesn't make sense. It's not fair. And so it helps actually negotiate the landowner and the government to negotiate a resolution, maybe without hearings.
Can a landowner get their own appraisal before they accept or reject the government's offer?
Under the new law, yes. The government will automatically reimburse you for your appraisal expense up to $5,000.
How about you talk through an example of a recent case?
Well, the most recent case I'm proud of is the Bloomington homeowners case. I recently represented 8 single-family homeowners whose homes are being taken by the Metropolitan Airports Commission for the new north-south runway. The MAC was taking the property to eliminate the home use because the noise impact of the new north-south runway would be prohibitive. The MAC refused to offer fair prices, recognizing the true highest and best use of their properties. The MAC insisted on valuing the homes as if they were single-family homes. But we looked at the neighborhood and saw it was only a block or two from the Mall of America. In addition, the new light rail transit station at 28th Avenue was being constructed. Ceridian Corporation's headquarters was right next door. Polar Fab Semiconductors was right across from the entrance to the neighborhood. And the huge development of the near the Health Partners corporate headquarters and the new Bloomington Central Station development was being undertaken about a block down from the neighborhood to the east. We looked at the city's comprehensive guide plan, too, to see what the city planned for the neighborhood. And we found that the city had planned for high-density, mixed-use development all around the neighborhood. And we found that they had planned for this since 1980. The city actually referred to its Airport South District as the third downtown of the metropolitan area. After we viewed the neighborhood and saw the commercial development in it and reviewed the city's comprehensive plan, we felt we had a strong case for a higher and better use for the neighborhood. Nevertheless, Convincing the court-appointed commissioners of a higher and better use, even under these circumstances, is not easy. It's always difficult to change the existing use of the property to a higher and better use in a condemnation proceedings. After 15 days of hearings, we convinced the court-appointed commissioners, however, that the neighborhood did have a higher and better use than for single-family homes, and the award rendered by the commissioners was more than twice what the MAC had offered the homeowners. The MAC had offered the homeowners a little under $3 million, and the award was $6.6 million for the property's higher and better use of high-density residential mixed use.
When you're in a hearing, does the landowner wind up testifying? And if so, what advice would you give to a landowner if they're in that position?
In all cases, the landowner does testify. They are one of the primary witnesses. They're considered to be qualified to have an opinion on the value of their property. And the advice is to tell the truth, which we always tell our clients and our witnesses, and that I will ask the questions, we'll prepare you for your testimony, and all you need to do is follow my lead.
Now, how quickly can the government take possession of a piece of property?
Well, with the military, they can take immediate possession. But under most circumstances, under Minnesota law, there's a 90-day rule that the property can be quick taken after a 90-day notice is given. So it takes at least 90 days. Under federal law, the government can take possession to the property immediately. They make a declaration of taking, they file it with the court, and they own the property. No notice, no time, no nothing.
So, Jim, what should a landowner do if the government decides to take some of their property?
It is important to know that you should not, and I repeat, you should not accept the government's offer. The government's offer, historically, has always been low. Next, you really should consult an attorney who is knowledgeable in eminent domain law. Any attorney who practices in eminent domain law that I know will be willing to have an initial consultation with you, initial meeting, without charge, to give you a preliminary evaluation of your case. We look at that as an opportunity to possibly have a new case. And we're willing to sit down and see what the situation is and give you a preliminary advice as to what you should do. If you have a good case, the attorney generally will be willing to take it on either an hourly or a contingency fee basis. If you pay hourly, most attorneys will expect to be paid monthly, and that means it's out of pocket. Some clients prefer to do that. They have the cash. They want to do it hourly. They don't want to pay a contingency fee. If you wish to pay a contingency fee, you only pay the fee if and when money is received that is greater than what was offered to you. So contingency fee is often a choice for clients who don't want to have out-of-pocket expenses that they have to pay. You really want to find a lawyer who's knowledgeable in eminent domain. It's a very specialized area with special rules. And as important is knowing the players in the field. It's a fairly small group of players in the field. The appraisers and attorneys who practice in this area know each other. We know their tendencies. We know sometimes their weaknesses. But it's important to know the players in the field. And perhaps most importantly is to know who you want as a commissioner to decide your case. There are certain commissioners who are known to be lowball and they know to do a lot of work for the government. If you're a property owner, you don't want those on your commission to decide your award. So typically, the landowner's attorney and the government's attorney are able to agree upon commissioners who can be appointed. And by agreeing to that, we usually get pretty fair commissioners. If a landowner goes in by themselves and they're not really, they don't know the players in the field, mm-hmm. the government can load the court-appointed commission who decides the award up with people who are conservative or favorable to the government, and you don't want that.
Well, you've certainly given us a lot to consider, Jim. Thanks very much for your time. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. If you'd like to learn more about eminent domain law, we invite you to contact us at 612-335-1500 or visit us online at www.leonard.com. Leonard Street & Dinard is among Minnesota's largest law firms, with offices in Minneapolis, St. Cloud, and Mankato, Minnesota, and in Washington, D.C. From its regional base, Leonard Street & Dinard serves clients throughout the United States and internationally. The firm employs nearly 200 attorneys in more than 40 practice areas, and since its founding in 1922, has helped generations of clients achieve their business objectives through astute legal advice, complemented by good common sense. To learn more, visit Leonard Street & Dinard's website at www.leonard.com. This podcast is provided by the law firm of Leonard Street & Dinard as a service to clients and the general public. The information contained in this recording is neither designed nor intended to be relied upon as specific legal advice to any individual or organization. Listeners should always consult with their attorney about specific legal matters.